Let's keep it real. This is the Damage Report. It's a Wednesday. I'm J.R. Jackson. As a matter of fact, what I say, it's Wednesday. One more time. It's Wednesday, but also very importantly, it's Rayvanna. She joins us on the program. She's a Rebel HQ contributor, and she's on every show on the network. If she could be at the same time, she would do that too. What's up, Ray?
I'm happy to be here with you. You abandoned me last week, News Wednesday, because you were sick or whatever. I know the truth. You can't lie to me. Just didn't want to do Big News Wednesday with me, but I'm glad that you showed up this week.
I don't like you outshining me. I'm a bit of an egotistical person, but I will have a little proof. I've run out of so much Kleenex. There's none in the studio nor at home. We've resorted to cheap toilet paper that you find in the restroom. That's what we're working with. If you hear some sniffles and some snorts, apologies, it's me. If I mute myself because you guys give me trouble for it, it's because I'm trying to avoid you hearing the sniffs and snorts. It's all laid out there. So let's get to some of these stories. How about that? But if you're enjoying us, of course, you guys like, subscribe, also share that stream. We're talking about very important things today. Of course, the political nature of what's going on with the House Republicans and how they're destroying everything in their path, which they've already done before. But in this case, it's over this shutdown problem, and Kevin McCarthy is feeling the brunt of this whole thing. Kevin McCarthy's losing control over the House GOP. And matter of fact, the folks who helped him get that speakership in the first place, they're turning on him just like we thought they would, kind of like how they said they would. So he's begging Congress members to go ahead and get something done, specifically on the government shutdown that they're teasing might happen because they're worried about spending, cutting more from folks that need it or that pay for it as well. Let's get some details from the messenger talking about what's going on now. Yesterday and all the drama that happened, it was a House vote on a procedural rule that would have allowed amendments and debate on the defense appropriations bill. It failed 212 to 214. The five ultra conservatives who voted against that rule are Andy Biggs, Dan Bishop, Ken Buck, Ralph Norman, and Matt Rosendale. They have also been engaged in a larger blockade on all appropriation measures as they seek deeper spending cuts. So for people who don't pay attention all the time, those spending cuts mean they're coming for you. These spending cuts are not anything for corporations and rich billionaires who are giving the money to tell them to cut deeper on your pockets. More though, some far-right lawmakers who voted with McCarthy are also blaming him for the issues going on. Many of us have been telling the speaker he needs to show us the entire puzzle and his commitment to getting the pre-COVID spending levels. We wanted to see that commitment for the entire package. If he would have done that, that would have passed. It's the speaker's failure. That comes from Representative Bob Good, who was then still upset about it, but then was on his side. So it's still Kevin McCarthy's problem. It's the problem with being the speaker. It's the gift and a curse. Asked if it's time to oust McCarthy, Representative Good said, "I don't have any comment on that." Maybe he's still thinking about it. "I'm disappointed. I'm pissed off," is what Representative Mike Garcia, a Republican from California, told reporters. And he's holding court with other GOP military veterans in Congress who shared in that same sentiment. While noting his respect for his colleagues who cast votes in opposition, Garcia added, "They just handed a win to the China Communist Party." Of course, that's to go to those levels when they're talking about this. But he's still upset and he's frustrated by what it is that they're doing. By the way, though, we've talked before about the things that Kevin McCarthy's been pushed into doing that I think he was a little bit worried about doing. One being that impeachment inquiry for President Biden. It's not looking so good right now. And this was the other thing. He's trying to get these things pushed through, get the government funded, and not look like they're destroying the government. They do it every cycle that they're in power, but why not again here? But one of those reasons that he's doing all this is because this piece of paper, very official paper, was found in the restroom. It's a resolution to vacate the speaker's office filed by Representative Gates. It was found in the restroom, I believe. So Representative Gates has been threatening whether or not he's going to file that to oust Speaker McCarthy from his position. And people are wondering, are you going to do it or are you not going to do it, bro? And apparently he was thinking about it. It hasn't necessarily been put in there yet. But the question now for this whole situation, Ray, is he on his way out? I saw this as a head fake, but maybe it's actually something he's looking to follow through on.
I think it's interesting. I don't know if they'll be able to get the votes to actually vacate the speaker. I don't know if Representative McCarthy is going to go from Speaker McCarthy back to Representative McCarthy. We'll see. I will say that I think it's really fascinating to watch this internal conflict go down, because it's entirely self-made on the part of the Republicans, because they're allowing Donald Trump to dictate their entire agenda. Even the impeachment of Joe Biden has, Donald Trump has all but said it is revenge for him being impeached. This is not a good move for Republicans who would consider themselves moderates. I don't necessarily think there's anyone who's truly a moderate Republican, but Republicans in purple districts who are going to be facing tough competition from Democratic candidates in this upcoming election. And the margins by which they maintain the House is narrow. They cannot full-throatedly endorse an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. That's why he didn't have the votes to authorize it in the first place. But then you also have the far right Republicans who the Matt Gaetzes, the Lauren Boberts, who opposed his speakership in the first place, who do get brownie points by opposing him every step of the way, by framing it as though he has not sufficiently capitulated to all of their demands, who are running in districts where they will suffer no electoral drawbacks by being firmly and fiercely in Trump's camp. So it's really just being torn apart by these two sides, and he's trying to appease both of them. But for him personally, I think that he is feeling the fire and wasn't the man for this job amongst the Republicans. I don't think he was, a foot in each camp, really, for someone who doesn't necessarily have an ideological difference from the far right Republicans. I think it's interesting to watch this.
I always wonder, is it because it's McCarthy? Say someone else got the opportunity to be speaker, and would they have treated him or her the same way, is the question. Because again, he's been getting pulled in every other direction. We've seen at one point he dislikes President Trump's actions when he was in office, specifically around January 6th. Then he's back at Mar-a-Lago kissing his ring, and he's been back and forth from the MAGA factions of the party to back to then saying what he actually does want to do before then doing their bidding. It doesn't really bode well no matter what for him. So I wonder if it's just him, or if they're looking for chaos. What does Matt Gaetz want? He was even asked. He's appearing on Newsmax and all these programs, and he talks about, he's asked directly, I think, at one point. So is it you want to be speaker? Even asked, people are speculating he's going to run for governor of Florida at some point, all these political divisions that he's got happening. And he says he has no interest in any of those levels of power. He thinks there's better leaders than him. He just wants to keep things a certain way in Congress. I don't know. But if you have a thought on that, I'm willing to hear it, but we can shift gears to the next aspect of this about Social Security.
Yeah, just lastly, I'll say, it is a Kevin McCarthy problem, right? He's weak. He's a weak weak leader of the Republican Party, because when you look at the history of Mitch McConnell and his leadership in the Senate, he has his ducks in a row. You don't see this type of infighting amongst the not vocally, at least, amongst the Republicans in the Senate. And I think that obviously his mental health is severely deteriorated at this point. His cognitive abilities are severely deteriorating with age. We'll see how long he can keep that. But he has sort of ruled Senate Republicans with an iron fist. They don't have these problems. We've seen, even members of the Democratic Party, even Nancy Pelosi had a pretty good ability to keep her, the members of the Democratic Party in line, for better or for worse. Representative McCarthy has none of that. He can't do it at all. He couldn't do it from his inception as, even leader of the Republicans, but definitely not as speaker once they gain control. So it's him. He's weak. He's a pushover.
Yeah, it must be the fact also there's so many more members in Congress. So Kevin McCarthy has the many more MAGA Republicans that he's dealing with. I'm not sure how many are in the Senate. They'll say things, but they don't necessarily act the same way that many of these congressmen do. So maybe it's easier for McConnell to have his folks in a row. We'll see. But again, I didn't think it was going to get this fascinating. When Kevin McCarthy had this issue getting his 15 votes to get in the speakership, I was like, this is going to be messy for his entire time there. But I didn't know it was going to be this bad. The way Republicans are still trying to hold up this entire vote on funding the government, because they still want to come for more regular folks. Let's keep it real. We talked before about how looking for more spending cuts. And of course, when it comes to Social Security, that's number one cash cow, no matter how much they deny it. Let's go into this, because progressives have been sounding this alarm on the way conservatives, specifically in the House, want to come for your Social Security. As a matter of fact, House GOP budget blueprint is to create a bipartisan commission, to review and propose legislative changes to Social Security and Medicare. You know, because it's a big tent party and they work for the regular people. Every time they say it, just remember what they're proposing. This is when they have actual agendas, when they're not talking about these culture wars that they're pushing to make you think that they're fighting for you. Here's some details on it, because advocates have been decrying these commissions as an attempt to bypass this regular legislative process. That's what they're looking to do because they know how unpopular it is. Here's some details. Nancy Altman, president of the advocacy group Social Security Works, noted in a statement that the White House has accurately labeled a commission as a death panel for Social Security. That's referring to a Biden administration spokesperson's response earlier this year after House Republicans and this guy named Senator Joe Manchin with a D behind his name. They floated the idea of a bipartisan commission for the program. So Joe Manchin is on board for this whole thing. So it must be bipartisan. Here's more from Altman about this situation. The only reason to make changes to Social Security via a closed door fast track commission is to cut benefits. Representative Arrington and his fellow Republicans understand this, which is why their budget would create just such a commission. Republicans desperately want Democrats to provide cover for Social Security cuts, which are rightfully unpopular with voters of all parties. And one more party, because their desire to cut Social Security and Medicare, again, like I said, they've been saying it openly right before they say we're working for you. House Republicans haven't exactly been coy about their desire to cut Social Security. In June, a panel comprised of 3/4 of the House Republican caucus released a proposal to gradually hike Social Security's full retirement age to 69. It's a move that would slash benefits across the board. And even one more part here, Ray, before you jump in, because Kevin McCarthy back in May was talking about Social Security. What was he saying?
I'm going to announce a commission coming forward from the speaker from bipartisan on both sides of the aisle. We only got to look at 11% of the budget to find these cuts. We have to look at the entire budget. The Congress has done this before.
Why didn't you see the whole budget?
Because the president walled off all the others. The majority driver of the budget is mandatory spending. It's Medicare, Social Security, interest on the debt. So you only have 11% to look at this budget.
Okay, my last thought here before you jump in, Ivana. Anytime they talk about how the biggest drivers of our debt or biggest drivers of our spending specifically is the American people, that means they're saying you don't deserve the benefits of being an American. You don't deserve the benefits of paying taxes. You keep paying into the your taxes, and what they're telling you response is thank you for the money, you get nothing or you get minimal back. As a matter of fact, everything you're getting, we want to cut further before we cut further again, and then before we cut further again. So what is it you're paying taxes for? As they Republicans like to complain about high taxes and look at those high tax blue states that give you nothing. What are they proposing to give you? They're proposing to give you fights about bathrooms, about Dylan Mulvaney, and about Bud Light. That's what they're fighting for as they cut your benefits. Cut what you deserve. Let's stop saying benefits or entitlement. It's what you paid for. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think the most frustrating part of the story to me is the word bipartisan, because we were just talking about having the control of your party. If we had a strong Democratic, this big D Democratic party, there would be no bipartisan consensus on cutting Social Security. That would get you ousted from the party immediately. It should be, you know, it's always called the third rail of politics, yeah, is cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare, because they are time and time again our most popular government run programs. People love these programs. This is why, you know, people get to retire because of programs like Medicare, like Social Security. They are super popular. It's why people don't like, even Republicans don't necessarily like to come out and say, oh, we're looking for alternative solutions to, you know, our Social Security problem. So being a member of the Democratic Party, it should absolutely not, you should not be allowed to join in any sort of bipartisanship when it comes to cutting Social Security. That should be enough. If we had a president who used the bully pulpit, if we had someone like Bernie Sanders as president, I know damn well this wouldn't be any sort of bipartisan, you know, committee.
Yeah. It's insane, but you know what? That's the situation we're in. That's the situation McCarthy's in. He's very frustrated. He was even cussing them out in a few other moments and said, "Go ahead and file the motion then." Okay, we'll file the motion then, bro. The fighting continues. So let's remember that next time you guys are voting, you think that this is the party with the mandate that knows what they're doing.
When I was critical of Kevin's leadership, oh, I'm just an ethically challenged congressman. But then when Victoria Spartz, a congresswoman from Indiana, came forward and said, no, I agree with Matt Gaetz that it's Kevin McCarthy who failed us. Well, then he said, well, she's just a quitter. Now, this is a woman who said that she was going to be returning to her family because they needed her. And Kevin called her a quitter. Meanwhile, when a man in Congress actually left in the middle of his term, Chris Stewart, Kevin McCarthy didn't call him a quitter. So he's been reckless and unhinged and rattled and misogynist in how he's attacked those who are making a substantive argument.
You ready for the biggest joke? Republicans talking about misogyny, and they say that it's a problem. Specifically here, Matt Gaetz talking about Kevin McCarthy and his response to one woman that is Victoria Sparks in Congress, Representative Victoria Sparks. It's misogynist because he said, well, I guess she's a quitter. Let's go to some details of how this happened, because I think he's still looking for another angle to attack McCarthy from. Problem is, he's talking to conservatives and they don't give a damn about misogyny. But here, unfortunately, This was the statement about McCarthy from Victoria Sparks. She says, unfortunately, real leadership takes courage and willingness to fight for the country, not for power and a picture on a wall. It's a shame that our weak speaker cannot even commit to having a commission to discuss our looming fiscal catastrophe. Our founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves to see how this institution is betraying our republic for personal political ambitions. I'll say that part again, for personal political ambitions. This is a Republican talking. And our children will be ashamed of another worthless Congress. It's kind of the norm now. McCarthy attacked her over not seeking re-election, as Gaetz was talking about there, calling her a quitter, is what he said to Manu Raju from CNN. One thing I learned in life, anybody who criticizes you has never worked harder than you. If Victoria is concerned about fighting stronger, I wish she would run again and not quit. I mean, I'm not quitting. I'm going to continue work for the American public. And that's what then Matt Gaetz was then talking about, and he said it's a disgraceful quote. And then he continued those same lines about the fact that it's misogynistic and he's coming for a woman. He wouldn't do this to a man. You can have that perspective and it could even make sense. I just wonder how much he thinks that's going to stick with people who listen to what it is that he's saying. Victoria Sparks again, just jumped on a graphic 4. Says, I wish Speaker McCarthy would work as hard at governing our country as he does at collecting checks, but his wish might come true. I do need to regroup to win the war, but considering the significance of this battle, maybe I should win it first. Thanks, Matt Gaetz, for stepping up. So looks like he's collecting all the folks next to him to help him out, to at least build this coalition against Kevin McCarthy. And maybe that's what he's waiting for before he files this this paperwork to go ahead and have him ousted. But it's building. There's one more, but I want your thoughts on Sparks and whether or not the misogyny claim will work.
Well, I really enjoy the deep twisted irony of Matt Gaetz sitting there with Eric Bolling talking about misogyny. And for anyone who needs any context into their backgrounds, just Google Eric Bolling allegations or Matt Gaetz allegations. I promise you plenty of things will come up for both of them. I don't know if it's misogyny or not. Maybe it's inappropriate. She did attack him. She's having personal reasons for stepping down. Maybe it's an inappropriate thing to do. I don't know if it's misogyny, but I definitely don't need Matt Gaetz, sex trafficker, to tell me or to tell anyone what is and what is not misogyny.
He's working on it, and maybe it'll work to a degree, but either way, it's shots fired. One more shot that's getting fired. Maybe this is a little bit more of a, I guess, it supplements Matt Gaetz's position, because it's not the Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greens, and Lauren Boberts and Chip Roys of the world. It's someone else that's also coming from Kevin McCarthy. She's frustrated too. Watch that.
Matt Gaetz of Florida, your colleague, has suggested that he may introduce a motion to vacate the chair over all of this. You were asked about it on the weekend. You wouldn't say whether or not you would support such a motion, but you did say everything's on the table. So let me ask you, 2 days later, is this the sort of thing that you would support?
Well, for me, everything is on the table with regards to any motions or any votes that we have over the next week or two. Several members up here were made promises. Those promises were not kept. I'm not the only frustrated member of Congress up here.
Are you happy with the job that Speaker McCarthy is doing?
I would say, I would put me in the column of being very frustrated. I don't like feeling like I was misled or lied to on particular pieces of legislation.
So there you have Nancy, I'm blanking her name, Nancy Mace there talking about it. And we've seen her find herself somewhat a little further to the left than many other Republicans, specifically when it comes to women's rights, the reproduction rights. So she carries a little bit of weight when it comes to someone outside of the complete MAGA wing. But let's not forget, she was standing outside of Trump Tower begging him for forgiveness though, just in case. Is Nancy Mace helping this out? Is he on his way out even further? I honestly don't think he's going anywhere, but it's just going to be even messier if he doesn't go anywhere.
One thing,
I'm sorry.
Sure.
I don't know if you have thoughts. If you don't have thoughts on Mace, that's cool because we can jump out of this, but it's cool.
I was just going to say one thing is for sure, and that's that he has no control over the Republicans in Congress. He has whatever semblance of control he had over them has completely disappeared. I mean, you have people who should be your political allies bashing you all over, you know, cable news. It's not a good look for him. I don't think that he will be ousted. I think that eventually the pressure might be such that he has to step down. I don't think that the motion to vacate would, I don't think that they'd have the votes, but I think that if it continues on this way, there might be some pressure on him to remove himself from that position. But do Republicans ever voluntarily take power away from themselves? I've yet to see it. It would be a first.
True, absolutely. Maybe he's dealing with some sleepless nights, but he's definitely worried about what he's gonna do going forward. Because his name will forever be stamped on this after all of the rest of the historic things that he's been dealing with negatively. Let's take this first break. We'll have a few of your thoughts on the battles that are going on with Republicans. I'm curious what you guys think about how this will all shake down and who's actually winning in this. Who's even close to being right? I'm actually curious because there's not many good points amongst any of them. They're all fighting a bad fight to destroy the country. They're just coming in with different angles. We'll do more stories when we get back after we talk to you guys. We got Stockholm syndrome as Americans who vote and pay taxes and go, well, I just pay you guys to tell me what I don't deserve. But we're the best nation on earth. It's great to be an American until they screw you over for being an American. Okay. Let's go to this next story, you guys. Tim Scott is a fascinating figure. I've been saying it since years ago. The guy somewhat confuses me, but then again, he's pretty simple. Let's go to what's going on with him now.
I think Ronald Reagan gave us a great example when federal employees decided they were going to strike. He said, you strike, you're fired. Simple concept to me. To the extent that we could use that once again, absolutely.
Tim Scott says it's a simple concept for him to fire United Auto Workers that are striking because Ronald Reagan fired folks that were striking before. That makes sense. Matter of fact, what he threw in there was the federal workers is what Ronald Reagan fired, which I don't think anybody thinks that was a great move either there, but at least he had the right to do it. Tim Scott there, of course, he's running for president and he's trying to find some traction here. So I guess he's going with I just hate the regular blue collar worker line. I guess it works for Donald Trump. Why not work for him? But the problem is there was a bit of silence there as he gave that line. And maybe it was the looks of some folks in the audience that really showed that they weren't buying what he was selling, like this person there. As soon as he said it, they were like, say what? What's that you say now? So he continued on and he went with the line, or at least the approach that always works when you're in conservative circles. If you struck out once, you always hit home runs when you go for Joe Biden.
The first thing, part of the challenge that we have today with President Biden is, and I don't mean this to be disingenuous, I mean this to be sincere. I'm not sure if the words are bought and paid for, but it certainly he has been leased by the unions. And I say that because the first bill he passed, y'all remember the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package?
Yeah.
That only had 1% for COVID vaccines? It had $86 billion, I believe, for union pensions. Because they keep making these deals. And as a result of the deal, They promise too much, deliver too little, and the taxpayers pick up the tab.
So he has issues with Joe Biden's cozy relationship with unions, which also provide a lot of help for workers that would be absolutely dismantled by their employers if they weren't there. Yeah, I'm sure there's tough tactics and there's pushback and high demands. That's because these folks that are working never get all their demands met in the first place. Of course you start high. Still though, he has these issues with it. What about this whole thing about Reagan? Just flesh out really fast, since he brought up Reagan, because it's really easy for Republicans to say Reagan, Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan. If you say Ronald Reagan, that means anything else I say after that is absolutely acceptable, because Ronald Reagan is a deity, even though he did horrific things. Still though, this is the Reagan line. Former President Reagan famously fired the air traffic controllers when their union, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, called a strike in 81. The saga was a pivotal moment in US labor relations when the federal government signaled to corporate America that it was open season on unions. Private sector collective bargaining has continued to decline since then. Sounds like a great move, because private sector bargaining has been going down. I guess it's a win. More though, the air traffic controllers were federal workers who didn't have the legal right to strike or even to bargain over wages with their employer, though they were demanding raises. Reagan acted within his powers when he fired them. The thousands of controllers who participated in the strike were never allowed to return to their jobs. Good job, man. Those Americans, America first, right? F those workers. A little bit more. But the UAW strike, which has hit Ford, General Motors, and Jeep parent company Stellantis, involves private sector workers bargaining with private sector employers. It's illegal, Tim Scott. It's illegal under the National Labor Relations Act to fire workers for taking part in a lawful strike. So far, none of the big three automakers have claimed that the auto worker strikes are unlawful, because they'd be lying if they did. But then again, I guess the plan is Tim Scott would be president. Scott would come in. I guess he'd push for Republicans who would be controlling all of Congress to get rid of the National Labor Relations Act. Somehow flip that and make sure that unions and workers have zero rights, because Reagan. Right? There's more happening, but Ray, what's your thoughts, his approach here?
Well, primarily my thought is this is a man who's never gonna be president of the United States. Not now, not this election, not next, not ever. He has no charisma. I don't even know how he got elected into the office that he holds now. Whenever I see Tim Scott, the first thing that I think of is the time that Dianne Feinstein accidentally confused him for Raphael Warnock and congratulated him on winning his election in Georgia. She did. I'm also now, every time I see him, I'm now going to think about the tweet he just posted about how he got hungry and went to the Golden Arches and he's sitting there with a tray of McDonald's in front of him and the weirdest smile I've ever seen. You're campaigning in Iowa. Go to a diner. It is like the prototypical Iowa campaign thing to do is go to a small business restaurant, sit at the counter and, you know, pose for a picture with someone working there. This guy goes to McDonald's. I mean, like, if someone lacks, if someone who is a politician completely lacks any political instincts, that person is Tim Scott.
Well, I mean, he says things softly and kindly. He walks up and no one ever dislikes him. He's not an abrasive guy. He's not gonna go call, maybe he's calling a couple names here. And I feel like I was surprised when I've seen that, but that's his approach. And then he looks very handled by staffers and, you know, campaign directors that are telling him which way to go about it, which somebody told him, you go to a restaurant somewhere, and he's like, there's a McDonald's. I haven't had a Big Mac in a while. It has to be a certain kind, Tim. But let's go to what it is that these UAW strikers are actually asking for, because apparently it's way over the top. They want to destroy the auto industry in America. So this is what they're looking for. There's four parts of the demand. I want to focus on mainly the wage increases. Let's go to that, because they want wage increases of about 40%. Damn. Wages are, for obvious reasons, the biggest sticking point in the ongoing talks. The UAW is pushing for a roughly 40% general wage increase for its members over the length of a 4-year contract. And so far, the companies have offered to pay raises of about 20%, which is a jump from their opening bids, but still only half of what the union sees as adequate. Really fast though, because I read more details as this whole thing went through. NPR was putting all this together. When it comes to that raise on that, they'd had previous negotiations of 2007, 2008, where part of what they conceded, the worker side, was nearly about 20% of a jump in raises they wouldn't have gotten to help out these auto workers, from my reading of this as well. So they're just looking to get that part back that would have been a part of a normal wage increase, especially as all of these the income comes in and the amount of money, the profits that are making from these auto companies also still increases. And who's getting paid? You guys know who's getting paid? Not these folks. There's a little bit more though, you guys. But for auto workers, it's also personal. The contract UAW negotiated in 07 included a freeze in base wages for workers over the length of that 4-year agreement. This is what I was just mentioning. And as a result, the average hourly wage for workers manufacturing motor vehicles and parts has dropped by more than 20% over the past 2 decades when adjusted for inflation. That's according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So it's not even necessarily something they're looking to gouge them on, even though 40% sounds crazy. But they're looking for that 20% when there should be another 20% that would have been there if they didn't have those concessions. Last part here, General Motors CEO Mary Barra, the highest paid chief executive among the big three, made nearly $29 million last year. The SEC filings show that this is 362 times the median GM employee's paycheck. So when you hear folks talk about how this is destroying the auto industry, and I can't believe these greedy workers want living wages, or even if it's above living wages, how about we start normalizing that? I don't have to live at the base living wage, because someone making $29 million last year is definitely the F not living at a base minimum, barely making it by wage. That's above and beyond. Why can't I be at least beyond, not necessarily above? You don't deserve it, you're just an American. Rayvon, other parts that they're demanding about is reinstating the cost of living protections as things have changed, ending the two-tier system for wages and benefits, and also job security as many of these companies transition over to EV, these electric vehicle changes, which is gonna cost them tons of money. That's for sure, but they're making tons of money.
What's your thoughts? Primarily, the first thing I'm thinking of is, the year mentioned when these previous negotiations happened, when they reached this previous agreement, 2007 is important, because these shifts in agreement were made at a time where there was, a very low union support in this country, and at a time where the Great Recession was happening, and it made somewhat sense to go, to have these shifts in the way that the structuring of the employment is to protect the jobs at the time, because the profits were not at an all-time high. They are now. They haven't, they haven't gone back to the previous system, and we're watching the CEO make more money than they ever have before. And it's time for, the workers to see the fruits of their labor. I'm, also so excited to see this shift in momentum towards unionization, the shift in support of unions that has been, as I said, historically low in the past, is now, at least in modern history, historically high. So, and all the solidarity between the unions striking right now is fantastic. So to see someone like Tim Scott at this moment decide to say that we should fire the striking workers is such a misread of what's happening.
It's outrageous, but you know what? He thinks that that's the way to go, because that's the way it's always been. Conservatives, Republicans specifically now, are always like, anything that changes, anything that we shift as far as how we do things in this country is a bad thing. The way it was always done was great. That's why we don't want to teach the history of the bad things that we've done, because then that'll start to dispel the other things we've done that maybe weren't as horrific as how we enslaved folks just to get the economy of this entire country going to where it went. Even past that, the way that we've treated workers in the past, there's all kinds of things, because there's a reason why we talked about Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas lifting some child labor laws. They're all over the place as far as changing the way things are, because they never wanted to change from then either. The things that exploit workers, that exploit the regular blue collar folks. So when you hear Republicans talk about how they're working for the regular guy, all those folks at MAGA rallies, and that Trump is going up to Michigan to talk to folks, they're not ready to hear it anymore, because that's hitting them in their pocketbooks. They're seeing who their enemies are. And many times it's Republican elected officials that are working for the people who are looking to exploit them. It's a simple equation. It's a matter of whether or not people want to look past all the culture war BS and see how they're coming for your money. And they'll blame other folks instead. Tim Scott did it immediately after not getting an applause line for saying F those workers. Oh, let me shift to Joe Biden. It always wins, because then their brain's spinning. Oh, that's right, I hate Joe Biden. Therefore, I'm okay that I'm broke and they're exploiting me. That's what they think of you, Republican voters.
Can I, Can I say something? You haven't been to St. Louis since before I was born. That's crazy.
There's no problem, because Jackson said, I was 4 years old. Mike here, producer Mike here for the show. What were we talking about? He said he was 4 years old or 4 months old when something I did went down. We'll talk about it later. As a matter of fact, I might not show up. I might be sick all next week over that, just so you know. Wait, how much longer before you were born did I leave St. Louis?
Oh, it was Nintendo. A year.
Okay, good. This was close.
It was close.
It was the Nintendo 64 that's behind me that Mike reminded me that we were talking about. He said, I think I remember playing that one time in preschool. That's what it was. Because I was playing that at 16. Okay, let's go to this next story. As I said, we've got, I used to have this bumper for the watch list, you guys. We've got good news. I wish I brought it for you guys. But let's go here. Here it is.
Today, I am proud to announce that for the first time ever, Pennsylvania is an automatic voter registration state. That's right. From now on, when you get or renew your driver's license or an ID card at the DMV, you'll be registered to vote unless you choose not to. Look, this is common sense. You already provide proof of identity, residency, age, and citizenship at the DMV. All the information you need to register to vote. We're making our state government work better for the good people of Pennsylvania. No matter who you choose to vote for or what your views are, I hope you'll make your voice heard.
Josh Shapiro out in Pennsylvania is doing things. As you saw, automatic voter registration is what's now been kicked in. Sounds pretty good. Sounds like very American. It sounds like you're there for the voters, for the American people, because we're the country of freedom and representation of the people. So there's absolutely no problem with this, right? Before we get to where the problems actually are, let's look at this map of to see how Pennsylvania, what other states they have joined to with automatic voter registration. They're the 24th state to do this. We're almost halfway there. The gray states are obviously the ones that have not enacted this type of situation, and you can tell which kinds of states those happen to be. Do they not like democracy? Who knows? Let's go to some of the political impacts of this, because this is why some folks are pushing back. Although Pennsylvania flipped blue in 2020 without automatic voter registration, Drexel University political science professor William Rosenberg says that AVR could still be seen as a disadvantage to Republicans. Really? Because when it becomes easier and easier to vote, it's to the disadvantage of Republican candidates, because that means there's likely to be more turnout, particularly among Democrats, that might be somewhat disadvantaged by the prior restrictions that are also in place. We already know Republicans are fighting against voter registration laws and actually acts that they put forward to actually expand voter access. They do not want people voting. Wish I'd remember to put this in, because from like 1981, that's when I was only 1 year old. In 1981, I believe, around early 80s, Paul Weyrich, big guy in the Republican Party, was talking about how he doesn't want people to vote. The more people that vote, the more Republicans lose. I want little to no people voting. Then we can control it better. If you think that's just something from the 80s, keep looking at the way they're responding to this. The Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania had this reaction. It said, making it easier for uninterested, uninformed people to wield political power would inevitably lead to terrible political choices. I'm going to read that one more time, and I want you to put in your head the MAGA folks that are standing outside of Trump rallies. Making it easier for uninterested, uninformed people to wield political power will inevitably lead to terrible political choices. It expands the pool of citizens to conscript into jury duty and gives more votes to harvest. So outside of just giving access to people to vote, somehow it provides for more voter harvesting that they still haven't proven is happening in a widespread way either. Critics will say that this makes the vote less secure, as he's pointing out there. But actually, when you are confronted with reality, you see that that's BS. Because Jesse Allen is a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, noted that automatic voter registration would improve this accuracy of voting rolls. Voter records are already often linked to motor vehicles because they want people to be accurate. So in this way, for example, if somebody changes addresses or gets married and changes their name or goes and gets a new driver's license, it would automatically update the voting record and make it more accurate. And Ray, that is the problem. It'd be a lot harder for Republicans before they lose a race when they're saying, I'm going to lose because they're cheating. They already can't prove it in the first place. But even more so, they'd say, well, we really can't prove it because the voter rolls are updated. We can't say that this person is voting for a dead person because it's all stay standard with those driver's licenses, which we know are very hardcore about being up to date and being accurate. They find it out all the time. And if it's connected to it, there's a lot less chance for them to fool people into thinking that there's cheating going on. What's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, very libertarian to argue against, you know, enfranchisement of everybody, very pro individual liberties that you only want, you know, well-educated rich people to be able to vote. Fascinating insight into the libertarian mind there. I live in an automatic voter registration state. It rocks, you know, not having to constantly, you know, make sure that I'm, if I just go to the DMV, if I update my driver's license, then it's done. I don't have to worry about going through the process of changing my voter registration and then inevitably on, you know, voting day, if I forgot to do it, having to run around and go to a different precinct because I'm not able to vote at the one I'm at. It is very telling that the Republican Party sees widespread enfranchisement, things that make it easier for individuals to vote, as a negative, because they know that it hurts them. When more people are able to vote, they know that it hurts them. It's why so many Republicans on record have said things along the lines of, without the Electoral College, we'd never win another national election ever again. Because it's true, because they don't have popular ideas, because you know, the people who live in like big cities typically do not vote for Republicans. Most people don't vote for Republicans. Most people in this country don't support their policies or their party. So when more people are able to vote, particularly people who come from historically disenfranchised communities, are able to have easier access to voting, it spells bad news for the Republican Party.
Think about the folks who run around on election days looking for, you know, to tie up loose ends or something isn't accurate or on some kind of thing. Who talks about it the most as if it's a big problem are conservatives. And they say, look what they're cheating. They're doing this, they're doing that. It gives some credence to that. If that gets eliminated, their argument for losing is taken away. At least one more of them it is, even though the rest of them are also BS as well. The Biden administration is now looking to finally put forward, coming up this Friday, they're going to announce this new council to talk about gun control. He's put forward some particular measures. Let's go to this from the Washington Post. President Biden on Friday will announce the creation of a new office for gun violence prevention. It's an escalation of the administration's efforts to tackle the issue amid stalled progress in Congress. According to four people briefed on the action who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss plans that were not yet public. So they leaked it so we can talk about it before Friday. The creation of this office fulfills a priority of gun violence prevention groups that have pressed for this action to be taken since Biden took office, believing that this move would allow for the White House to exert more leadership on the issue, which will be translated from opponents of this to say they're trying to control your lives, maybe to keep more people from being murdered. But still, for years, we've advocated for a centralized team responsible for coordinating federal and state resources and mobilizing movement partners, a government focal point dedicated to creating a framework for overseeing national policy, research, and resources would be more than symbolic. It'd be a significant turning point for the movement. That's what Shannon Watts said, and she's the founder of Moms Demand Action. And according to Gun Violence Archive, which defines a mass shooting as an incident with four or more people either murdered or injured, there have been 504 mass shootings in the US so far in this year. And so again, I've said many times, Ray, anytime there's policies put in place to prevent the spread of AR-15s and AK-47s, unlimited rounds, magazines, and all these different things that people, let's keep it real, don't need. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how, you know, these gun restrictions are destroying the country. Anybody who potentially would have been shot because these some rules have been put in place, they're still alive. We don't know that because we can't live in this alternate world where if it wasn't put in place, it would have still happened. But there are people that still get murdered every day and we kind of don't seem to care. So why aren't we doing something about it to prevent it? We're always talking about prevention from one side and many conservatives always want to talk about punitive, but it's too late. Your family's already been murdered.
Exactly, because you know, however harsh the punishment is, so you know, Republicans are always advocating for the death penalty. No matter how harsh the punishment is, you can't bring back the person that they murdered. So it isn't nearly as effective as you know, actual preventative steps. I will also add that I read this week that at some point Larry David was at a wedding that Elon Musk was at, and he confronted him and said, "How can you vote for Republicans? Do you like kids getting killed in schools?" And I think more people need to bring that attitude to people who vote Republican, because what are you condoning other than, of course, the litany of disgusting culture war nonsense that they're always spewing? But on top of that, you know, advocating for less restrictions so that we have more mass shootings, more school shootings. You read that statistic, you know, 504 mass shootings so far in the United States. What goes through Republicans' heads when they hear that? Woo, America, number one. Like, is that something to celebrate?
Yeah.
Why is your emotional support AR-15 more important than a child's ability to get an education without fear of being murdered in their school?
It's all about the money. That's who pays them. And again, the rest of you Americans, who cares? You're just Americans. If you die, that's okay. But when Donald Trump gets put up on some charges of things that it looks like he very much did, we're a third world country now. Okay, sure thing. The folks who are dead, what level of a world country are they living in right now? Let's squeeze in Marge. I might go a minute past. I'm wearing this hoodie. It says Justice is Coming. If you've been paying attention to Cenk Uygur, you might realize that he released his book. It's called Justice is Coming. Marjorie Taylor Greene is apparently she's that way. Marjorie Taylor Greene is apparently in competition with one Cenk Uygur because she's releasing a book too. We'll see if it reads the same way. Here's that graphic of her book because she looks like a badass in front of the flag. That's probably not her. Here's some details of why she's doing this. This is great. She says, "I wanted people to hear my side of the story." She said this in an interview. "Some of it is setting the record straight. I'm always controversial, but I think this book might be a little controversial with some of the stories," she said, adding that it will allow her to introduce myself to America as me, not the character that the mainstream media created and has sold to America over the past 2 years. Outside of the fact that everyone has seen who you are based off of this mainstream media of your Twitter page, your Truth Social page, your appearances where you talk to people, your recordings that you record of yourself harassing folks, that's the image that we've gotten of you from you. But still, more. Over some 300 pages, Green has said she covers her upbringing and her controversies first campaign for the House in 2020. She writes about former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's efforts to get her kicked out of the House and Pelosi's successful bid to knock her off of committees, as well as Marge's campaign to stay relevant, eventually helping House Speaker Kevin McCarthy win Pelosi's job. So she's revealing all the details. It could be pretty interesting to see some of the backdoor deals and the way that she's maneuvered throughout this whole thing. But also, Green teased to the Washington Examiner that her book will include a revealing story about the January 6th riot. Oh my God, this is an admission. And Green's take on the origins of her, quote, Jewish space laser conspiracy. That part I'm much less interested in hearing about. And also, the last news about this, she acknowledged that the book has a higher purpose, this is my favorite part, of laying the groundwork for a bid for higher office. Which office, though, by the way? She says, "I haven't made up my mind whether I will do that or not," is what the Atlanta Journal-Constitution newspaper reported that she said about a Senate run. "I have a lot of things to think about. Am I going to be part of President Trump's cabinet if he wins? Is it possible that I'll be VP?" Let's look at this graph as you talk about this, Ray. But if you're looking for Marjorie Taylor Greene's name, don't look at the top.
If there is a secretary of CrossFit, then maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene will be in Trump's cabinet. The first thing I thought of while you were going through the story was the book version of the Barbenheimer double feature is reading Justice is Coming and then reading the Marjorie Taylor Greene book back to back. No, please don't buy her book. Please don't read her book. I will say maybe I hate myself, but I do like to buy, or not buy, to, I won't say how I'm reading these books, but I like to read right-wingers' books just to ascertain whether or not they wrote them themselves. Dave Rubin definitely wrote his book. Oh. Most Republicans don't do that, but there is a quality to the writing that you can tell. There's a quality to the writing or lack thereof where you know he didn't get a ghostwriter to write that.
Well, we'll know that Cenk wrote his own book if there's some definite yelling in the middle of it. Then yes, we know Cenk wrote the book. Yeah, he definitely wrote it. I saw many times that he wasn't in the studio for long stretches because he was writing that damn book. Let's keep it real. So Marge, I mean, I guess we won't reveal the ways that you're going to read it, but I'm looking forward to your updates and telling us how the whole thing went down. My mental sanity. I can't take it. So I appreciate you, Ray. I'll be checking in. Let's check in with you guys after a few more minutes, because we have the aftermath coming up next. That does it for the first hour of the damage report. Of course, if you're members, you guys can hang around and we'll do a few more stories, maybe even loosen it up a little bit. I always say so, but it's still serious stuff that we can, I guess, laugh at a little bit. We'll see you guys on the back end of that. If you want to become members, of course, sign up at TYT.com, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.